Hey everyone, welcome in to another daily editorial here on the KE Report. In this daily editorial, I am introducing a new company to all of you, my listeners. The company's name is Heliostar Metals, traded on the TSX Venture Exchange under the symbol HSTR and on the OTC markets under the symbol RGCTF. I'm chatting with Charles Funk. I think a lot of you know at least a little bit of Charles's background. I've had him on the show a couple times before, once simply discussing the markets, and a couple other times his name has come up as the VP of Exploration over at Vizsla Resources. Charles is the president and CEO of Heliostar Metals. Now, this is a relatively new company. The company is focused in Alaska on the Unga property. This is an 100% owned project. Now, there are a couple nuances of this project that we will discuss here in terms of the different targets and even some of the work that has already been done in 2020. But Charles, please start us off with a general overview of a bit of a history on the Unga property, please.
Yeah, thank you, Corey. Unga is an amazing project. It's in the Aleutian Islands in Alaska, and it's a very high-grade gold project. We have a resource of 384,000 ounces at 13.8 grams per ton. And as we'll discuss, it's wide open to expand.
Now, when it comes to the overall project, I think it's important to understand that that resource you outline comes from one area of this project, SH1, it is called. I will post the image on slide 6 on the company's presentation that highlights where the four main target areas are, one being obviously this SH1, that's the resource area. Down to the south is the Apollo mine area. We also have Aquila, that is to the west. And you also have this Centennial target that is actually on a different island. So can you just break down how this project all balances out with these four different target areas, please?
Yeah, so geologically, this is an amazing project. It's a huge sort of 10 by 13 K zone of gold mineralization, copper mineralization with porphyry potential, high and low sulfidation gold potential. But for the investor, I suppose the key features is Unga is almost like buying a time machine back to the 80s when the best work was done on the property. There's been very little work since then and a healthy gold price appreciation. So Heliostar came about because Heliodor merged with Red Star in August last year. We completed a name change, complete restructuring of the company and built a new management team. And most importantly, we got underway drilling in September and October through to the very end of November last year. And our strategy is to demonstrate in 2020 and 2021 that we have 1 to 2 million ounces in our four main targets that you mentioned. And then there's a whole suite of opportunities beyond that that we could grow beyond that. But that's our first goal in front of us today.
All right, one point that we should quickly take care of here deals with the general location. When you are working up north, there can be issues getting onto the site and also shorter work seasons. What info can you give us when it comes to infrastructure in the area and general work season up at the project?
Yeah, so we're not Alaska like everyone thinks. Everyone thinks cold, frigid, short field seasons. We're in the Aleutian Islands, which is a long way south. It's actually further south than the Golden Triangle in BC. It has very temperate weather, sort of getting down to minus six Celsius or 30 Fahrenheit in January. So very temperate, and we have a 9-month field season, as evidenced by the fact that we were drilling until the end of November last year. We fly down to the town of Sand Point from Alaska and then bump 5 minutes over to our project on Unga Island. In fact, the Apollo mine was Alaska's first underground gold mine. So it does have quite a history of mining, and it's remote, but surprisingly accessible.
All right. So you already mentioned the current resource that is a little under 400,000 ounces at just short of 14 grams per ton gold. What's going to be a broad overview of the strategy that you are using to grow this resource, starting with what's going on at SH1?
Yeah, so yeah, we have this 5 to 15 meter wide true width vein with spectacular grades from surface. That by itself is rare at SH1. we think if we talk about these four targets, this is our pathway to our first 1 million ounces. And that starts with SH1, in that the deepest hole in SH1 is 5.5 metres at 24 grams. And that hole was drilled nearly 40 years ago and has never been followed up. So we've done 9 holes in the program in September to November at SH1. We're expecting assays from those very shortly. But we need to come back this year and systematically step out and expand this mineralization that's wide open.
So I understand that a lot of the assay labs are very backed up, but do you have any insights when you might expect these 9 holes to come back?
Yeah, we've announced that we've hit the vein in all 9 of those holes. 7 of those are shallow holes. So there's 2 parts of the resource. There's a really well-defined part of the resource that's quite well drilled. It has holes in it like 17 metres at 24 grams gold. But once you get out of that core area, the drilling is quite sparse. And so we need to do A, infill in that area, and that's what a little bit of that drilling is, and B, that expansion drilling where it's open and to depth and a long strike. So we should get our first results back sometime in January, and we should have consistent news flow through January, at least through the end of February, and we plan to be back at the program at the project in late March to continue.
All right, so that covers the drilling that was done last year in 2020, but when it comes to a follow-up program, I realize it might be a little bit early to answer this, but can you give us any insights on potential meterage or number of holes that you are planning on this year at SH1?
We haven't finalized it until we get those results back, but our estimate is another 20-odd holes into SH1 this year, looking to expand that resource into the 500,000 ounce to 1 million ounce range at SH1 just by itself, let alone the other targets.
All right, so working through the presentation, which I will post a link to below, obviously target one is that SH1. The second target that's outlined here is Aquila. This is the target that is a little bit to the west and south of SH1. Can you please give us a little background on some of the historic work done here at this Aquila target?
Aquila was really intriguing. So it's 6 kilometres away on the same vein. There's a lot of potential in between, but we went to Aquila because in the 80s, Battle Mountain found an 850-metre long zone with, you know, 5 to 30 gram rock chip samples. Drilled some holes, but couldn't get the drill core recovery. Their drilling wasn't successful. And so, again, this sort of time machine analog, 40 years later, we are the first company to follow up that drilling. The only results of the program that we've got back to date is our first hole in Aquila. We drilled 3.6 metres at 4.5 grams. So not a home run hole, but a pretty good start for what's effectively a 6 kilometre step out. And we've hit the vein in 4 out of 5 holes. We're waiting on assays for the 3 remaining vein intersections. And again, it's wide open along strike, it's wide open at depth, and we have to come back in 2021 and follow up to work out the potential, because we could be on the top of an ore shoot at Aquila.
Okay, so this Aquila target, it is just much more early stage, almost greenfields drilling. I realize there has been some historic work there, but it sounds like the at least early on part of this year is going to be more work to understand the potential of this target. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, the nearest drill hole from where we drilled is 400 metres away. So it's amazing. Like, the opportunity here is phenomenal. There's just so many high probability exploration targets at Unga, and that's what separates it from the average project.
All right, moving on to the third target area. That is this Apollo mine, or Apollo Sitka mine. As you said, this was the first underground mine in Alaska. What stage is this target area at currently?
It's an amazing story, the Apollo Sitka story. So it produced about 130,000 ounces of gold at 10 grams per ton. Was a very profitable mine in its time. But a curious thing happened. The old-timers didn't understand intermediate sulfidation veins. And for geologists, that model means it starts off gold-rich, becomes gold-silver, and then base-metal-rich at depth. Your listeners who are familiar with Mexican projects will understand this very well. And so they had incredible success shallowly in the gold part of the system. But once they got base metals, they couldn't recover that mineralization. In fact, they even got penalized for their zinc. And so the old timers looked for more mineralization, and they dug these shafts below the area that they mined. They dug these exploration tunnels and defined these zones, three zones, Apollo Shaft 1, Apollo Shaft 2, and Sitka. And they even went one step further. They showed the grade, estimated the grade under Apollo, they estimated 3 grams gold, 250 silver, and 10% combined lead zinc. That's 8 to 10 grams gold equivalent today. So we have this old mine where they've dug shafts, they've extended tunnels, they've told us the grade of the mineralization, and in 100 years, nobody followed up until we started drilling late last year.
So what is the strategy going to be on how you get under that mine and delineate a potential resource, or at least get a handle on the mineralization still left around?
The old-fashioned way, with the drill rig. So we started drilling again in our program last year. We drilled 3 holes under Apollo and 4 holes under Sitka, and we hit a mixture of some workings, some veins, some stockwork zones. We're impatiently waiting for the assays for those. But now we know the exact location of the vein because we're working off cartoons that, you know, were illustrative of what happened 100 years ago but weren't exactly perfect. And so our plan is to come back with another 20-odd holes into Apollo Sitka in 2021. And we think we have another 0.5 to 1 million ounce, in this case, gold equivalent target at Apollo Sitka, just sitting there waiting for systematic drilling.
So is this Apollo Sitka mine target area, is this some more, could you say, low-hanging fruit in terms of bringing more ounces into a near-term resource calculation because of the past work that's been done here?
Yeah, the old data won't help for the resource itself, but it helps with the location and the confidence because they've physically dug those tunnels, given us the widths and given us a bulk sort of grade. So now that we know where the veins are with the drilling, yeah, we have to just systematically drill. So we can't use it in the resource, but it's a huge head start for increasing the probability of success.
All right, over to target area number 4. That is the Centennial area, which is on a different island from the other targets that we've talked about. Again, just refer to that figure that I have posted below the interview. What's going to be the strategy here at Centennial?
Yeah, Centennial is a variation on the theme. So logistically, it's actually road accessible from the fishing village of Sandpoint. It's actually the same fluids, instead of forming in a vein, have come up and gone into a porous flat-lying unit. And so Battle Mountain, again, in the 80s, found this zone. There's a 200,000-ounce resource at 1.3 grams. To be clear, that is not a compliant resource. That is a historic resource. But what's caught our attention is, as well as the fact that there would be a next-to-no strip ratio, great metallurgy from a leach perspective, there's some better holes in it, like 4.6 metres at 5 grams. And some geophysics done a couple of years ago suggests a feeder zone. So we'll look in 2021. We're going to get there this year, but we drilled extra holes at Sitka and Aquila. But we'll come here next year and put some holes in to look for those feeder higher grade zones that might increase Centennial. So I think I might have said to you in the past, Corey, in social conversation, that if you had any one of these targets, you'd be pretty excited. But to have 4 targets, you know, one's a resource that's wide open, the other's an old mine where they've blocked out the ore, the other's a non-compliant resource, and the other's sort of an aborted discovery. That's our first 4 targets at Unga.
Yeah, considering too that you have already drilled some of these targets and we should be seeing some drill results in the near term, then we transition into the next drill program. Again, we'll follow up as we get some more information on this program, but you mentioned the longer work season in this area of Alaska. Does that mean that you expect to have drills on the ground in March when that season opens up?
Yeah, so our plan is to remobilize probably a little later in March and get underway by the end of March. We'll definitely have one. We might even have more. We're just going to wait for these drill results to see. We're fortunate that we're in a healthy financial position. So we're just finalizing what that'll be. And as we get the results over the next sort of 2 or 3 weeks, I think that can start to guide whether we start with one rig or two. But we'll definitely be back underway in late March this year.
All right, let's talk about cash in the bank then. To move forward with the upcoming drill program for next year, where does the company sit cash-wise currently, please?
So we were fortunate that we timed our raise quite nicely last year, in August last year, when we raised $7 million. We're going to finish the year with just short of $5 million worth of cash and investments in the bank. We're going to put 600,000 of that into some early stage but quite exciting projects in Mexico in February, March, and then back to focus on Unga, which is our flagship project by late March.
Okay, let's also talk about some of these projects in Mexico. Again, the company's flagship truly is this Unga property, but you are going to be doing some work in Mexico. You will hold a total of three projects. Please give us an update on what work you're going to be doing down in Mexico.
Yeah, there's a common perception when for northern Canadian or Alaskan explorers that you can sort of sell and forget over the winter. And we think we have two lines of defense for an investor to remain engaged with Heliostar. The first is the long field season that you touched on. The other is some early stage but pretty exciting projects in Mexico. So we have three projects. We'll be drilling at La Lola, a vein that gets up to 40 meters wide, and we think has a buried zone of mineralization, has surface results like 424 grams silver or 60 grams gold. So that will be a target that we'll be drilling. We've got another project called Oso Negro, which has got some absolutely fantastic surface grades. There's three veins over 500 meters long with between 200 grams and 2.6 kilos silver. Nice consistent mineralization with between 1 and 10 grams gold, and they've never been drilled. So we've just got to do a bit more mapping and sampling to understand them a little better. And then our third project is Kumaro, which is a sort of a key block in the middle of the new district that Silvercrest has just acquired, and we'll be doing some mapping and sampling there. So our portfolio is a touch earlier stage, but it fits with the projects that we really like at Heliostar, which is high grade with demonstrable upside, clear exploration potential for them to be bigger.
So how are you going to balance out working in Alaska and exploring down in Mexico? Is it as simple as when you can't be on site at Unga, then you'll be down in Mexico, or are you going to balance it out in a different way?
A little bit of that. I think a company can quite comfortably handle two jurisdictions. Three becomes a bit of a stretch for a small company, but I think two is quite reasonable. So Heliostar has a lot of experience both in the United States and in Mexico. So we've got a team comfortably undertaking the Mexican exploration through late January through to March, and then we'll focus back as we were last year back at Unga. Unga's clearly the most advanced and most exciting, so it'll see the vast bulk of our exploration. But you never know, there's some pretty exciting projects in Mexico as well, so we'll see what this program reveals for us.
All right, let's wrap this up with just a comment on share structure. The company has a very tight share structure, only about 31.5 million shares outstanding, a little over 34 million on a fully diluted basis. Please share with us what management holds and any other large shareholders.
Yeah, so you're right. We're fortunate that we have that really tight share structure with no warrants on issue. The first thing, I suppose, is the board and management own over a fifth of the company, over 20% of the company. So we're very strongly aligned with our shareholders. We have a very long-term view of how we want to build Heliostar, and that is supported by major investors, including Eric Sprott, John Tognetti, a number of other high net worth investors who have come into Heliostar. So a very strong structure to start to reveal the potential of Unga and our Mexican portfolio from.
All right, Charles, as I mentioned, I will post that slide 6 below this interview and a link to the company presentation. So please, everybody, go over that presentation. Let me know what you think of this company. That's why I'm bringing on all these companies, introducing them all to you, because I'm curious as to your thoughts. And if you have any follow-up questions, I'm always reachable on email at fleck@kereport.com. I am going to follow up with Charles as some more drill results come out to the market and see how this story progresses. Charles, thank you for your time. Thank you for the update. And I'll chat with you on the back of some drill results.
You too. Thank you very much, Corey.